Shallan awoke as a new woman. She wasn't yet completely certain who that woman was, but she knew who that woman was not. She was not the same frightened girl who had suffered the storms of a broken home. She was not the same naive woman who had tried to steal from Yasna Kolin. She was not the same woman who had been deceived by Capsule and then Tin. That did not mean she was not still frightened or naive. She was both. But she was also tired. Tired of being shoved around, tired of being misled, tired of being dismissed. During the trip with Tavlakov, she pretended she could lead and take charge. She no longer felt the need to pretend. Heroes of presents Stormpod, a Stormlight Archive podcast. Book 2, Words of Radiance. This is just a quick spoiler warning for chapters 35 and 36 of Words of Radiance. If you are behind in your reading and you are going to get spoiled, what's that word again? Oh yeah, spoiled. Make sure you go back and read up. If you've skipped an episode by accident and you don't want to miss out on the fun, make sure you go back and find the right one. But if you're exactly where you're supposed to be, dramatic pause. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Q, and he just said that I had a face that could kill a man from a distance. I guess I have ranged weaponry. Baby, it's Jack! What's up?
Hey, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm pretty good, man. I'm pretty good. Barrage of insults between Kaladin and Shallan is like a match for the ages, bro.
It's almost a better fight than
Balboa and Drago?
The two wizards in Fellowship of the Ring between Saruman and Gandalf. Yeah, when they're exchanging blows. Like, I thought that exchange of blows was like, nobody can beat that.
Yeah, but no griffins, no giant eagles were coming to save fucking Kaladin this time. He had to fucking fight on his own, dude.
Oh, yeah, it's killer.
Shallan
it's
is
killer.
Vicious, bro. Like, vicious.
She's vicious, and she's so quick.
Yeah, she's so quick-witted.
Like, wow. So good.
Yeah, I like it
just
a lot.
Just so good.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
So what did you think overall of these two chapters?
Well,
first one's a little bit sloggy, right?
So part three. So this, we are at part three.
Right.
That's the big
officially
deal.
Officially starting part three, yeah.
And Brandon Mr. Sanderson has called it deadly.
He has.
So part three, deadly. That it scared me a little bit, so I just changed it to Dudley.
To Dudley.
So this is it was just a little too frightening to me. So chapter 35. I also want to comment on the title of this chapter, The Multiplied Strain of Simultaneous Infusion.
Yeah.
This reminded me of the Pearl Jam song Elderly Woman Behind the Counter in a Small Town. Because for the most part, I think that's the longest title in any of the Stormlight Archives books.
Like, I think so.
Like, I'm pretty sure that the people doing the printing of the book was like, you know what? Like, we can't fit that many words in the arches here, like in the relief. It's just not possible. And Mr. Sanderson's like, no, you're going to figure out a way to do it.
Guess what? Guess what your job is.
You're going to soul cast that text until it fits.
Right.
Okay.
Elderly woman. That's funny, dude.
Yeah, so that's what...
I like a good elderly woman behind a counter in a small town joke.
Well, Pearl Jam, I mean, come on. They went from having... Well, this is going way back, though. Like, when they released 10 and
Even
Versus.
Flow,
like, every song...
Was a one-word
Jeremy. Every song was like one or two words.
Yeah.
One word, and all of a sudden... And then all of a sudden, elderly woman behind the counter in small town.
You know what, guys? Hey, this second album is coming along really good. We got Review Mirror, we got Daughter, but I feel like we might want to have a longer, yeah.
Oh, God. Okay, well, we get something really interesting here in the beginning of chapter 35.
Yeah,
I don't know if you want to talk about the artwork
yeah,
now
we should.
Or when it relates to what we're discussing.
Right. Well, let's just mention that there is artwork at the beginning here, and that it will relate into this thing, this experiment that Navani is working on. Also, though, the little tent at the bottom in the left-hand corner is also the one that the that Adeline saw the Ardents do on their own without Navani. This is the one where they turn the silk drapes into stone.
Right.
Yeah, we can revert back to it afterwards once we actually get there.
Yeah, let's revert. It's just, it's so great to have these illustrations. Mm-hmm. They're so cool. But okay, so at the beginning here, we get some excerpts from Words of Radiance. So we're getting a little bit here that says, they also, when they had settled their rulings in the nature of each bond's placement, called the name of the nail bond. Hmm. With regard to its effect upon the souls of those caught in its grip. In this description, each was related to the bonds that drive Roshar itself, 10 surges, named in turn, and 2 for each order. In this light, it can be seen that each order would by necessity share 1 surge with each of its neighbors.
Right.
So this is kind of neat.
Yeah. So there's 10 essences, 10 heralds, 10 silver kingdoms, and 10 surges. And we kind of knew that already.
Yes, we did.
And we kind of know that they share, that each surge binder will share one of its surges with a neighboring classification or different kind.
Right.
And for us, it's Radiant, Knight Radiant. But back in the pre-Knight Radiant days, they would just call them Surge Binders, right? So we know that because Yasna says her and Shallan shared soul casting. They both could soul cast, but they both their other surge was different from each other.
Right.
So the orders that which they belong to were neighboring. And that would mean that on either side of them, their other surge that they had would also be shared by somebody else. So if Shallan's are soul casting and light bending, illumination, whatever it is that she can do with light, then that means there's another order of Knight Radiant that can do the same she can do and one other different thing.
And one other. Yeah.
Right. So it's kind of neat, right?
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
We start off with Adeline throwing his shard blade.
Yeah. This is awesome.
And he says, a master of the blade learned to do more with the bond. He learned to command the blade so that it can remain in place after being dropped, and he can learn to summon it back from the hands of those who might have picked it up. Mm-hmm. And he had learned that from Zael,
right?
It would appear. And the weapon, he says here, the weapon becomes a piece of your soul.
Yeah, I like that a lot. They're
bonded. So today the weapon disintegrated almost immediately after leaving his fingers. Mm-hmm. The long silvery blade transmuted to white vapor, holding its shape for a brief moment before exploding into a puff of writhing white streams. Adeline was frustrated and he growls, pacing back and forth on the plateau as he resummons his weapon. So he's been affected. So 10 heartbeats at times, it felt like an eternity.
Yeah.
He's not quite in control, is he here?
Yeah. He's frazzled. Adeline's rattled from the night before, because we find out just in a little bit here, the night before is the Zeth attack.
Right.
So he's still rattled by it.
Is it just being rattled that he can't control his blade the way he wants to? Mm-hmm. Is that just it?
Yeah, I think he's just not concentrating, right? He's not doing it properly. The cool description here I like is that the blade held its shape as vapor for a brief moment, so like the blade disappears, but in its place is this like vaporous outline of the blade, like a smoke ring. I love that. I think that's really cool. And then it's just like, and it's just gone. It's so interesting. It's so cool.
It's really
neat. It's a great visual.
So he's waiting around. It's funny. He's pacing back and forth. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like when you're playing a video game, you're trying to respawn.
Yeah. yeah, exactly.
He's waiting. He's wearing the plate without the helm. Mm-hmm. And he needed the plate today, he says, because his shoulder was still sore, full of bruises, purple bruises, mm-hmm. and his head still ached from being slammed into the ground from the assassin in wait.
Yeah.
He needed the strength of the plate.
Yeah, it's
looking
weird,
over his shoulder. He kept looking over his shoulder, expecting the assassin to be there. He'd stayed up last night, sitting on the floor outside of his father's room, wearing the plate, arms crossed, chewing ridge bark to stay awake. He'd been caught without his plate once, but not again.
So here's it. Here's the thing, right? He's rattled, and he also stayed up all night.
Right. He's sleep deprived, chewing on ridge bark. He's
right.
A little bit Elokar coming out of here. He's like, a little, don't you think?
Yeah, he's a little...
he's super on edge.
He sounds like he's going through some PTSD. Like he's been...
Yeah.
He's been really affected by this attack last night. He can't sleep. He's been standing watch outside of his father's room. He's taking supplements to stay awake, and now he's trying to practice being able to throw his weapon, which is not something normal for shard blades, because he's like, I won't ever get caught. We're going to get to here or there, but we're not going to I'm not going to get caught on the ceiling like that ever again, not being able to attack.
Ever again. Yeah. So, and then his inner voice is saying, well, what are you going to do, Adeline? You're going to wear it all the time?
Yeah.
Part of him asked such questions. Part of him that was asking these questions was rational, but he didn't want to be rational right now.
Yeah. I like this. I really like this from Adeline because, you know, Adeline in the first book at first is like looking down on his father for his like mental health and like, you know, dad's going crazy. Right. He might have to step down. He's looking at Kaladin and being very judgmental about Kaladin. And now he's suffered probably for the first time in a long time, maybe aside from maybe his mom, you know, not being around anymore and his uncle dying. This is the first real traumatic thing that's happened to Aladdin.
Well, I think what's really happened here is he's lost a duel.
Kind of. Yeah. Yeah.
He was bested. He was put in place. He is the kid.
For sure.
And he doesn't like being in that place for very long.
No.
So he's right now, he's considering doing whatever I can to never feel like that again.
Yeah.
It's funny how Shallan has very similar aspirations a little later in the other chapter. Like she doesn't want to ever feel that way again with regards to the power structures and whatnot. So,
yeah. Yeah. It's interesting.
Once again, so the weapon shatters into mist moments before it leaves his finger. It didn't even cross half the distance that he was aiming for. And he's thinking, what's wrong with me? I've mastered this many years ago.
Yeah.
True, he hadn't often practiced throwing his sword. Such things were forbidden in duels. And he had never thought he'd need to use the maneuver, but that was before he'd been trapped on the ceiling.
Yeah.
Unable to properly engage an assassin. So, yeah, the assassin in white has basically brought out of him basically decision-making that would push him out of what he's done most comfortably all the time.
Right.
So he's now willing to consider doing things that are, you know, rash, untraditional. Mm-hmm. He's going there. You know what I mean? Like, and this is the decision-making that Kaladin has already been through many times.
Right, right. And I like this because Adeline is like having to deal with this kind of stuff that he's probably never had to deal with. The other thing I really like about the throwing the sword thing is that, you know, in D&D terms, how many times have you ever tried to throw a sword because you're like, fuck, I don't have any else to do? And then your DM's like, yeah, that's going to be like a minus 10 because it's so fucking difficult or at a disadvantage. And not only does he have to throw a giant sword, but he has to make sure that he keeps it corporeal with his mind to be able to do so. So it's like another level of difficulty here. Like the DC on this is huge.
That's right. Well, you could launch your sword as in Sword and Sorcerer. What's that? What's that weird movie? Sword and the Sorcerer, I think it's called.
Oh yeah.
There's this blade. Yeah. There's this blade that the main character wields and you can like press a button on the sword and it launches an entire
I've seen that.
Oh, it's the best and the worst thing that could ever possibly happen to you. It is quite possibly the greatest sword and sorcery movie I've ever seen. That's funny. Love it. It's amazing. Anyway, so Adeline walks to the edge of the plateau. He stares out over the uneven expanse of the shattered plains, and he's watching the guards, and he starts
the Bridgman,
yeah. And he comments laughable. Well, they are guards, but in the text here he says laughable. What would three Bridgemen do if the assassin in white returned? So even though they are guards, he will never see them that way. No. He will only see them as Bridgemen.
But
Kaladin was worth something in the attack, though, Adeline thought.
Yeah.
More than you were. Mm-hmm. That man had been suspiciously effective.
Yeah, here it is again. This is this other thing that keeps coming back. Yeah, Adeline being suspicious of Kaladin again.
Yep. I told you it was going to happen, and I think it's going to get worse, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Hopefully there can be a unite them kind of moment.
Ooh. Maybe that's what the voice meant. Unite them by
unite
those
them.
Two guys best friends for the readers, please. That's what the yeah, unite get, them means.
Get this grumpy guy that's never satisfied with pretty much anything, and the guy that likes the fashion magazines. Can you get these guys on the same page?
Yeah, because I think that would be a really interesting friendship.
Renarin said that Adeline was unfair towards the Bridgman. I like this,
yeah.
That it includes this observation about Renarin, mm-hmm. because I feel like in the text, subtle, it's only one little mention here, but it means that quite possibly you can trust Renarin's opinion and take on things more than others.
Right. And I think that his brother actually does respect his opinion. We know how close they are, so mm-hmm. yeah, it's great. Mm-hmm. But there was something strange about the man, he thinks.
About the man, yeah. This is, I like the way this is worded. The way that Kaladin always acted, like by talking to you, he was doing you a favor.
yeah.
Like Adeline, and this is Adeline's, you know, thoughts. Not necessarily the objective truth, but his truth, I guess. His internal dialogue. The way that Kaladin was decidedly gloomy at everything and angry at the world itself.
Yeah.
He was unlikable, plain and simple. But Adeline had known plenty of unlikable people. I just think that's so funny that he's just unlikable. Like, he'll think about, well, he was good in combat and he's, you know, he saved my dad and I on the tower, at the tower battle with Sadeus with the betrayal. But
he's grumpy, and I don't like him. I just don't like him.
But he's unlikable. He's just. Adeline Shardblade drops into his fingers again. Never before had Adeline felt powerless when bearing his shards.
Yeah.
Even surrounded by the Parshendi, even certain he was going to die, he'd still felt power. Where was that feeling now? He spun and threw the weapon again, focusing as Zael had taught him. Sending a direct instruction to the blade, and it held together, spinning end over end, flashing in the air, and it sank up to its hilt into the stone on the rock formation. Adeline let out the breath he was holding in. Finally, he thinks. He releases the blade, and it burst into mist. So he'd finally accomplished it, but it took some doing.
Well, it's because he's just literally throwing the blade. And here, he actually is sending it direct instructions. Because we have to remember that whenever you win a shard blade, you have to bond it for 7 days in order to be fully bonded to it, right?
Right.
So, like, there is a link there. And in here, they're telling us that Zael taught him that you have to send it instructions in order to be able to do that. Right, so it's really cool. I really like this. It's really focusing on the bond between man and blade, which is cool.
Next paragraph has got something really neat in it I want to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
So, Aladdin says, "Come," to his bodyguards, and he walks to the nearby war camp. The camp says, "I love this description." The war camp had spilled out like the contents of a broken turtle egg. And over the years, had even started to creep down onto the near plateaus. What I want to talk about here is describing the camp as the contents of a broken turtle egg. There's so much imagery that you can talk about there. I personally feel you can talk about the fact that it's an egg, which is something that is in a developmental stage.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk about the fact that it's from a turtle. specifically it says turtle egg, and what do turtles get? They get shells.
Right.
Right? So they weather the storm. So the camp is bleeding out like egg and yolk, but it'll eventually, you know,
be okay.
Hopefully, weather the storms, and you know, like, right. So I just think it was chosen really, really well in terms of this of the description. I just loved it.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
There is a congregation in the war camps that is he's approaching of robed ardents. They're chanting in unison, and they have parchmen holding up these poles with these 40-foot wide banners of silk. I think it's red, but I'm not sure. That cuts off the view from whatever they're doing in the center, and he thinks soul casters.
Hmm.
He tells his guards to wait here, and he jogs over. The bridgemen obey. It says here, if Kaladin had been there, he would have said, no, you're not dismissing my guards.
Yeah, exactly.
They're going with you. Like,
and I like this here. He expands on his thoughts about Kaladin a little bit here. I really
like
it.
Go ahead.
Maybe the way the fellow acted was a result of his strange position, right? Why had Father put a dark-eyed soldier outside of the command structure? So what Adolin is thinking about here is that maybe the way Kaladin is acting is a result because he's kind of been put in this really fucked up situation where he's a dark-eyed man who's a captain, which never happened before. He's outside of actual normal command structure, which doesn't happen, right? So he's been put in a weird situation. So maybe he's overcompensating or something like that, right? And I like here he thinks, you know, he was all for treating men with respect, but the Almighty put light-eyed men in charge for a reason. It was like the natural order of things.
Yeah. I'm disappointed in Adolin's perspective in clinging to that, actually.
Well, he's a Voran man, right? Like the religion is a huge proponent of this, right?
I get it. He just hasn't
he hasn't evolved past his religious bigotries yet.
Right. Or prejudices, yeah. Mm. The Ardents let Adolin pass. Adolin was allowed to see the soul casters, but this was irregular. And it says, inside the temporary silk room. Now, that would have been my alternate title for this chapter. So, elderly woman in the behind the counter and the thing.
Yeah. Inside the temporary silk room.
I would have said, no, I just would have called it the temporary silk room. Adolin finds Kadash, one of the foremost of Dalinar's Ardents. He had been a soldier. He's got a scar on his head to prove it, and he's wearing blood-red robes. So here we go with the imagery once again.
Yeah, this guy Kadash is the same Ardent that Adolin went to in book one to talk about what was happening with his father with, like, the fits and whether or not he can be believed and all that stuff. Kadash is the same Ardent, so it's someone he trusts.
Now, this Ardent here, though, is not wearing the red... All the other Ardents are wearing red robes, but he's wearing the standard gray.
Right. The red robe ones... The red robe ones are soulcasters.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, it says here, he bows in respect to Adolin. Like all the Ardents, Kadash was technically a slave.
Right.
So, that's an interesting way of looking at slavery being an Ardent. I'm sure that Kaladin, considering his slavery, would have gladly exchanged with being an Ardent.
Right. These men sound like they willingly become Ardents. They willingly become slaves to pursue scholarly pursuits and everything in the Ardentia, right? So
I'm just saying that being a member of the Ardentia is a far cry from being a bridgeman.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So to use the term slave for both, really?
Yeah,
I think is a bit much.
Yeah.
That included the five soulcasters. Each stood with the right hand of their breast, sparkling fabrials on their backsides of their palms. One of the Ardents glanced at Adolin, and this is what I want to talk about. The gaze that he gave Adolin was not human any longer.
Mm-hmm.
Prolonged use of the soulcasters had transformed the eyes such that they sparkled like gemstones themselves.
Isn't that really cool?
The woman's skin had hardened into something like stone. It was as if the person were a living statue.
Remember?
I love that.
Remember when Yasna used the soulcaster on those men in the alley during the lesson? And she told she turned one into crystal, turned one into stone, turned one into smoke. She's able to transmute them into stuff.
And
in essence, kill them, right?
Right.
But it seems like prolonged use of the fabrial, of a soulcaster like that, will make you to start turning into becoming like and that. Rock. Yeah. So there's a difference between what Yasna did and what these people are doing. Yasna is doing it because she's got the talent to do it naturally. Yeah. They're using this device to do it. So
these are basically construction workers. Like you've got the people holding up like the yield sign, the stop sign. Those are the parchmen. Beep, beep, beep.
Yeah.
You know, like,
and they have to like call their, is it ready to go? You can go. Okay. And then they wave you through and flip the sign. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. These are construction workers. That's basically what they're doing. And they're not even doing that. They're also doing waste removal, as we find out.
Yeah,
in a minute.
That's true.
Okay. So Kadash hustles over toward Adeline and says, "Bright Lord, I had not realized you were coming to supervise." "I'm not here to supervise," Adeline says. "I'm just surprised. Don't you usually do this at night? We can't afford any longer, Bright One. There are too many demands upon the Soulcasters, buildings, food, removal of waste. Mm-hmm. To fit it all in, we're going to need to start training multiple Ardents on each Fabril, then working them in shifts. Your father approved this earlier in the week." So I just want to stop there and think, training multiple Ardents, an increase of these people that can Soulcast. Yeah, they don't have Fabrils for everyone yet.
Right. I want to add to this little blurb here.
There could be a pending threat there in the future.
That the fact that Dalinar approved this earlier in the week draws glances from several of the red-robed Ardents. And so I want to talk about this just for a second, because it sounds like the thing that they're not happy with is sharing their Fabrial, so they're possessive of it. But I think the other thing that they're not happy with is doing it in the daytime. Because it's an exposing what they can do in the open.
Right.
Whereas they used to do it at night. They always do this kind of thing at night so that people don't really see how they do it. You know, by doing it in the daytime, it takes away the mystique of it. It takes away that, you know what? I could do that. I could put on that dangly bracelet and do that. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right. And what's that old phrase? Obscurity is a fraud to hide nothing.
There you go.
There it is again. So when you have a secret, you want to keep it, you want to guard it. And there's no better way to keep a secret than to have it in closed doors, let's say.
Exactly. And this, doing it out in the open, training Ardents in the open like this is
it's an annoyance to them. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah, it's cool.
I see, says Adeline. He says, and then he thinks, and I love this observation. He says, we rely on these things a lot.
Yeah.
These Fabrials, they create all the grain. They are what allow this war to proceed.
Right.
So he's sort of like, wow, you know what? Everyone thinks about shard plate and blade, but really? It's these Fabrials. It's these Soulcasters.
They've told us before that going to war is almost near impossible without them.
Right.
Because it provides food, right? It provides everything.
Yep. Kadash says, may we proceed, Bright One? He nods. Adeline nods, and they go back to doing what they're doing. The five Soulcasters step forward. They raise their hands. And Adeline found his face breaking out in a sweat, and a cold wind sort of, you know, blasts him a little bit, sneaking past the silken walls. At first, there was nothing, and then stone.
Mm-hmm.
A brief glimpse of mist coalescing. Like the moment a shard blade appeared and a massive stone wall springs into existence, the winds blew inward toward it, sucked by that material rock, which was surprising to him because he said, why would the wind pull inward? Shouldn't it be blown out by the stone appearing here?
Yeah.
I have a theory about that maybe, but I don't know if it's right. It's like the wind might pull in to replace the space from which the stone was brought. Like, I'm not sure that the materializing, like soul casting, is necessarily taking, like basically materializing stone out of nothing.
Right.
I think that perhaps the stone is coming from somewhere else.
Right.
And is transporting here. And if it is, then the space that it occupied elsewhere is now filled with, I guess, wind, air. Air would occupy it, let's say. So maybe the wind.
We do know a little bit about how soul casting works. We know that you, by soul casting, you are trying to convince one thing to become another.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's right. It's a relationship. Right.
Right. So you're trying to convince the silk to become stone, But in order to do that, we know that this is heavily tied to Shadesmar from Yasna and
Shallan's
teachings.
Are they converting the silk to stone?
Yes. The silk, they've made this temporary silk room, and they've turned the silk into stone. Just like they did when they do the wood marble in Carbranth. Remember the marble wood?
I thought
wood?
The silk was just to provide a screen so that others don't see what they're doing.
No. That they're actually turning that into a permanent structure, a temporary silk room, into a permanent stone structure.
Interesting. Turning silk into stone. Okay.
Yeah. So the other thing here is that it coalesces. There's a brief glimpse of mist coalescing.
Yes.
Like the moment a shard blade appears.
A shard blade appears.
So there's a little bit of similarity here between the summoning the of a shard blade and the act of turning silk into stone. And like I said earlier, we know that soul casting is connected to Shadesmar in some way. Because of Shallan and Yasna telling us, right?
Right.
The other tiny little thing I want to point out before we move on is the five started softly chanting a harmony. So they're chanting and they're harmonizing to the singing of the Ardents outside. So there's five of them inside.
Yeah.
And they're chanting and they're harmonizing with Ardents that are outside.
Well, wouldn't that be I did put an asterisk on that, and I my only thought was, isn't that similar to what the listeners do?
That's what I was going to say, is that the Alethi seem to also have some kind of music relationship in their culture, or at least when it comes to soul casting.
Right.
So I found it very interesting that, you know, we're always talking about how cool the listeners are with their chant, like their chanting and their rhythms and all this stuff, but it seems like the Alethi have use of some kind of music and harmony in their, you know, everyday life as well, which is really neat.
Well, the stone wall that they have here was a new shape. It was flat on the side facing the war camps and it sloped on the other side like a wedge.
Yeah.
Adlan recognized it as something that his father had been deliberately wanting to build for months now. It's a windbreak. And he says, "That's wonderful, Kadash." And he says, "Yes, well, your father seemed to like the proposal. A few dozen of these out here in the construction yards will be able to expand onto the entire plateau without fear of high storms." And then Adlan thinks, well, that's not completely true. You always had to worry about high storms,
right,
since they could hurl boulders and blow hard enough to rip buildings from foundations. What I think is important about that is here you have an Ardent in gray, who's saying, you know, once we have these, you will have no fear of the high storms. Basically making promises and bold statements that aren't entirely true. They're not absolute.
Right, right. But they are helpful, right? If someone gets stuck out in the storm, they can rush to one of these windbreaks and get some cover, which is really neat.
But being helpful is a far cry from saying that you won't need to fear the high storms.
Of course,
anymore.
Of course, yeah.
Right? So I just wanted to point that out.
I just want to point out here at the beginning with the drawing, we have an actual illustration of the windbreak here.
Right.
And shouts out to Ben McSweeney, which is someone that we've conferred with and talked to a bunch on Reddit. And he is actually the artist that does these things in the book. So what up, Ben? But yeah, this little windbreak here is really, really cool with the little jewels at the top and the corners. So
I know.
Yeah,
it's really wonderful. Neat. Yeah. Okay. I still find it incredible, Kadash says, looking up at the stone barrier. He says, even after all these years, if we needed proof of the Almighty's hands in our lives, this is certainly it. And a few glory spren appear around him. So he's looking at this as just, you know, he's in his glory.
Yeah.
Creating these, being a part of this transmutation, if you will. The Radiance could soul cast, Adlan says, couldn't they?
Yeah.
It's written that they could. So I like that it says here that he puts it carefully. It's written that they could.
Right.
So according to the scriptures, the Radiance could soul cast. The Recreants, the term that for the Radiance betrayal of mankind, was often seen as a failure of Vorinism as a religion, because the way of the church sought to seize power in the centuries that followed was even more embarrassing.
Right.
What else could the Radiance do, Adlan says? They had strange powers, right? I've not read extensively on this, actually, Kadash says. Perhaps I should have spent more time learning about them. if only to remember the evils of pride. I will be certain to do so, to do this, Bright One, in order to remain faithful and remember the proper place of all Ardents. Kadash, Adeline says, I need information right now, not humility. The assassin in white is returned.
Yeah, here, this is the reason why he's bringing all this up, right?
Right. And then Kadash is gasping. He says, the disturbance at the palace last night? The rumors are true? Yes. Adeline meets the Ardent's eyes. That assassin walked on the walls as if the pull of the earth was nothing to him.
Yeah.
He fell over 100 feet without injury. He was like a void bringer, death given form. So I ask you again, what could the Radiance do? Were abilities like these ascribed to them? Those and more, Bright One, Kadash whispers. I spoke with some of the soldiers who survived that first terrible night when the old king was killed.
Right.
I thought the things they claimed to have seen the result of trauma. I need to know, Adeline interrupts. Look into it. Read. Tell me what this creature might be capable of doing. I like how he calls him a creature.
Mm-hmm.
We have to know how to fight him. He will return. Yes, Kadash says. He's shaken. But Adeline, if what you say is true, it could mean the Radiants are not dead. I know. And then Kadash whispers, Almighty preserve us.
Yeah.
So the Ardents are definitely wary, scared of the Radiants.
Right. Because their religion has taught them that
right.
That the Knights Radiant betrayed mankind.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I like this part. It's Adeline doing a little bit of recon here, trying to find out as mm-hmm. much information as he can about his foe. I do also like that he calls him a creature. He calls Zeth a creature.
Which means that was cool too.
He's as afraid of Zeth now as Kaladin is of horses. So.
Yeah, as Kaladin is of blasted, bloody monsters.
Beasts, those creatures. Yeah, so it's a comparable fear now.
Yeah, there you go.
So we have a POV change here. We skip over to my girl, Navani.
We get to go to Navani. Yeah.
So right off the bat, I just love the fact that we have a POV from Navani. There are very few and far between, but
there's
really
a lot
to
infer from this, too, mm-hmm. I think. Navani loved war camps because everything else was so messy. Shops were here and there. Streets were helter-skelter. They weren't put in straight lines. I'm always a little wary of people that love everything to be perfect and straight.
You're just wary of Navani from the very beginning.
I have been. Military men and women, however, valued order and rationality. Their camps reflected that. The barracks were in neat rows. The shops were confined to marketplaces, as opposed to popping up on every corner. Dalinar's camp, she notes, oh, he's so neat, so intentional. So it's like a perfect match for her.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, she just loves him so much.
She loves him. This was the mark of humankind, to take the wild and unorganized world around them and make it something logical. So, of course, I can speak to this about horticulture because that's exactly what you do.
Mm-hmm. And Shallan can also speak to this because this is what she does when she draws pictures. She catalogs the world and puts them into a logical representation. Okay, these bushes, I don't think there's a name. Let's call them crest spines. And I'm going to learn about them.
Right.
I'm going to do some tests on them. And we're going to know what this is logically. And we're going to make a book out of it. So I really like this. Navani and Shallan should get along quite well.
I should suspect so much more is done when everything was in its place. And I was just thinking of the wonderful Radiohead song, Everything in Its Right Place.
Oh, geez. So
which of course I feel has a very foreboding message about having the desire to put everything in its right place.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I'm wary. It's like an earlier lyric of theirs. Ambition makes you look pretty ugly.
Yeah.
when you could easily find, So she's commenting that so much more can be done when everything was in its place, when you could easily find what or whom you needed.
Right.
So I want to point that out, that she is, you know, that you could find things and people that you need easier when things are organized. Careful planning was like water that nourished innovation. Was the next line. I thought that was good too.
Yeah, that's really cool, eh?
So she's heading over to these engineering grounds, eastern section of Dalinar's war camp, and she says, all right, everyone, let's give it a try. So they're conducting this big test, this engineering feat that they've put together.
Mm-hmm.
And there's many, many people involved.
Isn't this really cool? What do you think about... Sorry, I don't want to interrupt you here, but what do you think about this whole experiment?
I love it. I think it's her way of trying to put together a project that might aid, you know, her family, help protect her family mm-hmm. by providing a military edge.
It's really neat,
by, by an engineering feat that involves Fabrials, which is, you know, something that she's been, you know, heavily involved in, although not, she's not a, an expert by any means, but...
She, this is the thing, is I think she is an expert, and she is very humble about what she says she can
reveals.
Do. Yeah, she's like, okay. You know, it's my team. Like, a little later, Adeline will say, like, you know, this your project. She's like, oh, I'm just their patron. Like, I just provide them with the money and the know-how, like, the ability and the place to do it. But she also knows all the science, too.
She's underplaying, right?
She's just, yeah, she's downplaying her own self, right?
Got it. That's cool.
She's giving everyone else the credit, and she's just like,
you must be.
Yeah.
You should know.
Yeah.
You should know.
Ew.
I love this engineering feat. It's really cool. Like, I like imagining her on top of this platform, this observation platform, 25 feet in the ground, in the air. She's looking over everything. She's got Ardens and scholars. One named Matane, who is a storm warden.
Yeah.
And then she has a comment here, which is interesting. They called storm, like being a storm warden, they called it a science in an attempt to dodge Vorin prohibitions of predicting the future. So Navani still hangs on to a bit of Vorin religion that
for
way,
sure.
In that she looks at storm wardens like, you really shouldn't be doing what you're doing.
Right, and then she's saying that storm wardens know they probably shouldn't be doing it, but they've classified what they do as a science as opposed to predicting.
To get around
it's just like meteorologists, right? We think the storm is going to go like this. Well, you're messing with the future. You're not supposed to try to predict stuff. That's of the Voidbringers.
She comments here that the Storm Wardens had offered some useful wisdom.
Yeah, which is why they were here.
And why they were invited.
Yeah.
But she wanted also to keep an eye on them. So the object of her attention is the circular platform in the center of the engineering yard. It's a wooden structure.
Yeah.
It has crenellations ringed on it, and they've set up some dummies, the kinds that the soldiers use for archery practice. And next to that grounded platform was a tall wooden tower with lattice work and scaffolding. And Navani says, you really should read this. Sorry, not
this is
not
this
Navani.
Is her,
this is Rushu.
Yeah, this is the this is, yeah, go ahead.
This is it's another Ardent.
Yeah.
And she says, you really should read this, Navani. And this is the young woman was an Ardent and had no this is Navani. This is an insight right here. And I want to I don't want to destroy Navani because I really don't know. I have no idea whether she's a fully honorable gal and everything's on the up and up or not. But she says here, the young woman, referring to Rushu, the young woman was an Ardent and had no right whatsoever to have such lush eyelashes or delicate features. Rushu had joined the Ardentia to escape the advances of men, which was a silly choice because all the men always wanted to work with her anyway.
Right,
because
she's just so fucking hot.
Fortunately, she's so brilliant that Navani could always use brilliance, so she's using her. But I just thought that it just reminded me of the queen in Snow White.
Right.
You know, like, how dare Snow White be more beautiful than me?
I don't think she's saying that. But I think that she's saying,
that's
like,
what I took.
But she's saying a little jealously, but also Navani's fucking hot too. Navani's like one of the hottest women on Roshar. So she's got nothing to worry
I'm
about.
I'm sure she is. Well, okay. All right. So maybe I read too much.
And she's also sitting on the Blackthorn. So let's not worry about Navani's, you know, she's got one of the best good looking guys in the whole world. I want to talk a little bit about this part here where Rushi's trying to get her attention. She's like, you got to read
her
this.
Her attention, yeah. You and really should read this.
She's like, Navani says,
I'll read it later.
We have work to do. But then Rushi starts to read a little bit out loud. And it says, changed even when he was in the other room, Rushi mumbled. Repeatable and measurable. Right. Only flame spread so far, but so many potential other applications. So she's reading this report.
Right.
This report she says, is what we read in one of the interludes in the first book. Gerenid and Bashir.
In The Way of Kings?
Yeah. These two ardents were in Erie, or they were in the Reshi Isles, and they were somewhere up north. And they were...
Okay.
The lady was doing experiments on Flamespren, and the man was doing experiments with curry and trying to... Like, he was trying to make food taste really bad. And then... When she would leave the room, they were able to predict what the Flamespren were doing, even though they didn't know, they weren't seeing it.
Even though they weren't in the room.
Yeah. So the interlude was called Gerenid. And so Gerenid and Bashir, this man and woman, ardent team, this is who they're talking about. So we...
How delightful that it's so stitched together like that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how, as a first-time reader, I don't know how you could possibly... You couldn't possibly get connect all this together. You couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's why you got to reread them.
Well, that's why you're here. Like, I love that you stitched that together for me. That's so cool.
It's really neat, eh? Like this tiny
that's
little
so
throwaway
cool.
interlude.
I love it.
Is now being placed referenced at the feet here of Navani, and this Rushi was like, "You got to read this. Like, this is amazing."
Right, this is amazing. And then I love also how it's just a little thing and Navani's like, no, I'll read it later.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And then she's like, back to the test.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, sorry, Brightness. The woman tucks away this this report in her pocket in her robes.
Yeah.
And she runs her hand across her shaved head. Navani, have you ever wondered why the Almighty gave beards to men, but not women, for that matter? Why do we consider it feminine for a woman to have long hair? Should not more hair be a masculine trait? Many of them have quite a lot. Many of them have quite a lot of it, you see. Focus, child, Navani says. I want you watching when the test happens. That goes for all of you. If this thing crashes to the ground again, I don't want to lose another week attempting to figure out what went wrong. So,
yeah.
Little neurotic, this Rushi. She's kind of got that, bumbling librarian sort of
a little bit
personality,
a little
like
bit,
you know,
yeah.
Just a little bit of that. Ardents were on various platforms nearby, watching and waiting intently with quills and paper to record. I love that image. Like they're just waiting. Like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to write something down. Like, the stones are infused. Everything's been set. Everything's been done and checked three times over. She steps up to the platform, holding the railing tightly with her free hand. True, the report said that the ship had been lost all with his hand. Oh, she's commenting about Yasna now. This is brutal.
Yes. Yeah, this is kind of an important
so this is hard.
Here.
Almighty. So, yeah. So she'd use this time to at first to divert herself from worrying about Yasna, though she'd eventually realize that Yasna would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, the report said that the ship is lost, but... This wasn't the first time that supposed disaster had struck Navani's daughter. Yasna played with danger as a child played with a captive Kremling, and she always came through.
Mm-hmm. So at least we know now that the report of the Wind's Pleasure going down has reached them. We've been waiting for them to find out.
So the real question is will Shallan tell the truth?
Right.
The assassins return, though. If he took Dalinar... As he had Gavilar, so she's commenting about that. She's lamenting that. But again, I would wonder, is it because she loves him so much, or is it because...
She's invested so much in
else?
Him? Yeah.
Give the signal, she says. We've checked everything more times than is useful. Navani noticed with annoyance that a figure in blue shardbladed had wandered onto the engineering grounds. It was Adeline.
Yeah.
So she was annoyed that he comes in. She turns back to the wooden tower. The Ardents at the top had activated the fabrials on this, and there were ladders at the side, and they'd pulled away the sides.
Right. So there's this tiny little platform on top of the tower. They activate the gemstones there. They activate the fabrials there. They pull the bottom out, like on wheels.
Right.
And now it's just hanging there, and it's being tied down by by ropes and by pulleys.
Right.
And so then once they pull on the pulleys and pull down this plateau, the other one that has the pretend archers on it lifts up.
Lifts up. Yep.
Isn't that awesome?
It's really cool. So the Ardents around her murmured with excitement. Now for the real test. The men, Navani waves, the men below worked the cranks, pulleys, the archer parapet shook and wobbled. And Rushu says, it's working. And Falilar says, I don't like that wobble. The ancient engineer scratched his beard. That ascent should be smoother. Navani says, it's not falling. I'll settle for that.
Yeah, this guy's being really nitpicky here. He's all like, nitpicky. The math is just slightly off. Yeah.
Rushu's like, the wind's willing. I'd have been up there, she says, looking through a spyglass. I can't see even a sparkle from the gemstones. What if they're cracking? Well, then eventually, we'll find out eventually, Navani says.
Yeah.
She wouldn't have minded being on top of the parapet herself, but she says Dalinar would not have had it.
No, he would not have been okay.
She comments here, the man was a deer, but he was a touch overprotective in the way a high storm was a touch windy. That's funny.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And also that she compared him to a high storm.
Right.
The parapet wobbled its way upward, but it did not fall. Adeline clomps up the steps, being all rattling and shaking the entire thing. That's funny. Logic Spren, we're starting to form. I like this.
Yeah.
In the shape of tiny storm clouds rising around them. It had worked. Their test had worked, finally.
Yeah.
Hey, Adeline says, is that platform flying?
Adeline.
Adeline says that. Navani says, are you only just now noticing this, dear?
Yeah.
He scratches his head. He says, I've been distracted, Aunt.
Yeah.
Huh. That's really odd. He says, what? Well, it's like, the assassin who had, according to both Adeline and Dalinar, somehow manipulated gravity spren. Navani looked to the scholars. Why don't you all go down and have them lower the platform? You can inspect the gemstones and see if any broke.
Yeah.
So the others took it to mean like that she wants to be alone with her nephew.
It's another example here of...
But Rushu stays around.
Yeah, Rushu's like, hey, I'll...
It would be better to watch from up here in case... And then,
Navani.
I will speak to my nephew alone. Yeah, so Navani has to make it clear to Rushu. It's like, no, actually, Rushu, can you actually get the fuck out of here?
That was just an excuse. I actually just want you to leave.
Oh, I love it. So she gives, she blushes, gives a bobbed bow, hastens away. It was difficult not to be dwarfed, but okay, these are observations from Navani, which I think are important.
Okay.
It was difficult to not feel dwarfed by a man wearing plate. Like, that's a concern of hers.
Well, they're so huge.
I know, but it's just that if you're viewing the world that way, like you're looking at someone in plate and your thought is that they're dwarfing you. Now, it could be just physical observation or it could be something else.
Well, she also says he could have snapped that rail without a second thought.
Yeah.
Like men in plate are dangerous.
Men in plate are dangerous. I will figure out how to make more of that, she thinks. To protect her family.
Yeah.
She's going to understand the secrets of technology and the power of the spren locked within the gemstones. She grows closer to finding what she is seeking.
Right.
Adeline was staring at her hand. Oh, so he'd finally noticed that, had he? Aunt, he says, you're wearing a glove? It's far more practical, she says, moving her fingers. Oh, don't look like that. Dark-eyed women do it all the time. But you're not dark-eyed. I'm the Dowager Queen, Navani says. Nobody cares what in damnation I do. I could prance around completely nude, and they'd all just shake their heads and talk about how eccentric I am.
I love this. This is Navani not giving a fuck. Like,
she doesn't give. I like that she is willing to do what she wants.
Yeah, she does whatever she wants. Yeah. I like it a lot. That's why she's one of my favorites. Like, what do you mean? Dark-eyed women do it all the time. Who fucking cares? Like, it doesn't matter.
Who cares? But you're not dark-eyed. Yeah, but I'm the queen. Nobody cares what I do. I think that some would care if she danced around naked.
Maybe.
I think some
like
would care.
Like Dalinar, maybe? And like, maybe the king? King wouldn't want to see his mom naked, but Just regular folks might be okay with it.
Might be okay with it. How did you do it? Adeline asks. And she says, conjoined fabrials. The trick was finding a way to overcome the structural weaknesses of the gemstones, which succumb easily to the multiplied strain of simultaneous infusion drain and physical stress. She stops speaking in this way because she notices that Adeline is not getting it.
Yeah, his eyes are glazing over and he's like about to fall asleep from boredom or something. Like,
so this is like peanuts. So he basically heard wah, 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 wah. And so she begins speaking in simple terms, layman terms. And she says, if you split a fabrial gemstone in a certain way, you can link the two pieces together so that they mimic each other's motions, like a span reed.
Right.
Ah, right, says Adeline. Well, Navani says, we can also make two halves like that move opposite to one another. So we filled the floor of that parapet with such gemstones and put the other halves in the wooden square. Once we engage them all, so they are mimicking one another in reverse, we can pull one platform down, make the other go up. And he says, huh, can you make this work on a battlefield? Of course, that's exactly what his father had asked.
Right.
And she says, proximity is a problem. The farther the pairs grow from one another, the weaker the interaction, and that causes them to crack more easily. You don't see it with something light like a span reed, but when you're working with heavyweights, we could probably get them working on the shattered planes. That's our goal. You could roll one of these out there, then engage it and write back to us via reed. We pull the platform here down, and your archers get raised up 50 feet. To gain a perfect archery position.
That is awesome.
And then Adeline's like, he gets excited. He says, the enemy wouldn't be able to topple it or even climb it. He says, the tactical advantage. And she says, exactly.
Yeah. And then he's like, you don't sound enthusiastic. And she's like, I am, dear. But this isn't the most ambitious idea we've had for this technique. Not by a faint breeze or a storm wind. So
what else has she got planned for this?
A floating archer parapet in a battlefield is not even the bottom of the barrel of the ideas they have to do this with.
Of the application for this conjoined fabrial thing. Yeah, so I know this is really cool. She says, it's all very technical and theoretical right now, but you wait. When you see the things the Ardents are imagining, and he says, well, not you? Well, I'm their patron, dear. I don't have time to make all the diagrams and figures.
Right.
Even were I up to the task. They suffer me. Surely it's more than that, Adeline says.
Yeah, this is
her being humble.
Yeah, this is her kind of downplaying her role here. You know,
right.
She's the Steve Jobs, but she also has Steve Wozniak capabilities with fabrials. So,
right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, so she's the patron, she's also the tech too. She's like, perhaps in another life I could have been. She was sure her as a colleague. Many, however, just saw her as a woman who sponsored them. So she'd have new fabrials to show off to her parties. Perhaps
she was just
a light-eyed lady of rank who had some baubles, some hobbies, didn't she? But she's like second-guessing herself now. Is that what I am? I'm just a high lady who likes to say, look what I've done. Look what I've been a part of. But she's actually, it's more than that. We've shown how excited she is for all this stuff, how invested she is in all this stuff.
I think it's just her feeling. She's always felt trapped. You know, she was under the shadow, if you will, of Gavilar, her husband, just being the queen, not being recognized I suppose that's it, is being recognized for her talents and her. And it's clear that she has talents not only in with fabrials, but also in engineering and the application.
Right.
Like, so that's some pretty serious stuff.
And she's smart enough to surround herself with capable people. And, you know, she said earlier, like, I can really use brilliant people. Like, she knows what to do, right? In order to get a task done, you surround yourself with the best capable people. So, yeah, she's she's not just tech, but she's also a leader, which is really great, you know? Yeah, it's awesome.
Mm-hmm. She says, I assume that, Adeline, that you're here to escort me to the meeting. This meeting, of course, is with Elokar, and I think with the other High Princes. Adeline nods, and then he hears a noise, and he steps protectively to get in between her very quickly, but it was just some workers making some noise.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, you're getting as bad as your father. And he says, well, perhaps I am.
Yeah, well, we know Adeline's already friggin' paranoid about everything, right?
So. Yeah, taking her arm. Yeah. Aunt, he says, have you been doing anything to encourage my father's advances between the two of you, I mean? Encourage him? I did more than that. I practically had to seduce the man. Your father is certainly stubborn. He says, I hadn't noticed.
Yeah.
You realize how much more difficult you've made his position. He's trying to force the other high princes to follow the codes using the social constraints of honor, yet he's pointedly ignoring some of something similar. Oh, it's a bothersome tradition, she says. You seem content to ignore only the ones you find bothersome while expecting us to follow all the others?
Yeah.
Of course, Navani says. You haven't figured that out yet? or you haven't figured that out before
She's
now?
She's so honest about it, right?
Just so honest. Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. Adeline's expression grows grim and she says, oh, don't sulk. She says, you're free from the causal for now. As Yasna had us apparently decided to gallivant off someplace, I won't have the chance to marry you off quite yet, at least not until she reappears. Knowing her, that could be tomorrow or it could be months. That's what she's thinking. Mm-hmm. So sad.
It is.
Adeline says, I'm not sulking. She says, of course you aren't. Patting him on the arm.
Yeah.
let's go to the palace. She says, I don't know if your father will be able to delay the meeting for us if we're tardy.
Yeah. That's the end of the chapter. So
that's the end of that chapter. So dude,
is,
I don't know,
it is,
man.
Really sad that Navani and Navani's still holding hope. You know what I mean? Like, oh, she's done this before. She's probably just off doing something silly. We'll see her in a week or a month. Like, yeah, it's just really friggin' sad, man.
It's so sad. Highlight? I don't know.
Yeah, what's your highlight?
Well, I guess it would be the experiment. But maybe more particularly just, I like learning more about Yasna's point of view. Mm-hmm. I think there's
Navani's
a few
point
little
of view.
Yeah.
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 Me too.
I think that's my favorite.
That's what I wrote down for mine too, but I'll pick a different one to have something different. I like the study of all these different fabrials. You know, we got the soul casters being used, and then the conjoined gemstones, and then we even have Adeline practicing with his shard blade, which is like, you know, an artifact,
failing
a
fabrial.
Failing to use it properly. So this is like a chapter where he really examines the use of all these different techs. You know, it's really, really cool. It's a fantasy story, but there's also like a little bit of technology here too, which is really cool.
So chapter 36, a new woman.
Yes.
What do you think? Is she a new woman? Is Shallan a new woman?
I feel like she wants to be, and that's the most important part.
I think she is.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so Words of Radiance. So it starts out with another excerpt, chapter 17 of the Words of Radiance. And when they were spoken of by the common folk, the releasers claimed to be misjudged because of the dreadful nature of their power. And when they dealt with others, always were they firm in their claim that other epithets, notably dustbringers, often heard in the common speech, were unacceptable substitutions, in particular for their similarity to the word voidbringers. They did also exercise anger in great prejudice regarding it, though to many who speak, there was little difference between these two assemblies.
So
here we get an interesting reference to the releasers referred to as dust bringers, too much like void bringers, which they resent.
Right. And dust bringers or releasers are one of, and we know that the Words of Radiance is a book about the Knight's Radiance.
The Knight's Radiance, yeah.
So dust bringers or releasers is another new name that we get of an order of Knight's Radiant, which is really cool.
Right. Shallan wakes up as a new woman.
Mm-hmm. Do you think she's a new woman?
She's not the frightened girl anymore, who had suffered the storms of a broken home. She was not the same naive woman who had tried to steal from Yasna Kolan. She was not the same woman who had been deceived by Cabsal and then Tin.
Yeah.
That did not mean she was not still frightened or naive. She was both. But she was also tired. Tired of being shoved around, tired of being misled, and tired of being dismissed.
What do you think about this this opening two paragraphs here?
Well,
do you think
it's
she's really becoming someone new, or do you think she's just shifting again
I don't know what to say about Shallan. Like, I think that she's suffered trauma in her past, and it has resulted in I shouldn't call it a chase. It's a search that I think may never end.
It's like an ongoing.
Like, I don't know if Shallan will ever find her true self. I really don't. Maybe.
Yeah, it's really cool.
But for now, she seems resolved.
She seems to be able to be what she needs to be in every moment she needs.
Mm-hmm.
So she's all these things. You know, she's not one of these things. She's no longer these things. That's not necessarily mm-hmm. true. She is all these things.
I hope that she does have this resolve. She certainly stands up to Kaladin. So that was really impressive. I think the real test for me to really sort of, if Shallan has come full circle, will be how she handles an audience with
the
both
High Princes
Dalinar,
and Navani.
With Dalinar, High Princes, and Nelikar. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, when she gets there, which we know by the end of this chapter that she's about to go in the room.
She walks in, yeah.
Yeah, dude.
The trip with Tevlakev, she pretended she could lead and take charge, but she no longer felt the need to pretend to lead. She felt ready to lead.
Right.
She kneels down beside one of Tin's trunks and asks Pattern, can you look inside of this? Squeeze in through the keyhole?
This is fucking cool, dude.
Dude, this was a great moment.
Yeah.
Pattern says, and he goes inside and he says, dark. And she says, drat. She gets out a sphere and holds it up to the keyhole. She's like, does that help? And he says, yeah. I see a pattern. A pattern, what kind of? Click.
Yeah.
I love that so much, dude, that he sees a pattern
inside the keyhole, the lock.
He knows how to manipulate it.
Yes.
He recognizes a lock and a pattern, and he goes, oh, that's a pattern. I can manipulate that.
You want to talk about subverting expectations? The expectation is, in every kind of fantasy, that you find a lock, you get lock picks or some kind of tool, and you pick the lock from the outside in.
Yeah.
Shallan has a tool named Pattern where she can send him inside the lock and unlock it from the inside out. How fucking cool is that?
It's so cool. And what I love the most is that he recognizes a pattern.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
I've said it before and I will say it again. Pattern is one of the most useful characters in this whole series. He's so awesome.
You unlocked it. And he says, a pattern. You can move things, push a little here and there, he says. Very little strength on this side.
This side.
Meaning
the physical world.
Right. The trunk was filled with clothing, had a pouch of spheres that would come in handy.
Yep.
She found a dress with a modern cut, fine embroidery. She tries it on. It's a little loose in the bust, but it's fine.
Yeah.
When she leaves the tent that morning, she felt like a true light-eyed woman. For today, she would finally reach the Shattered Plains and hopefully destiny. So yeah. I kind of want to stop on that and just think, well, she feels like she's come to her destination.
Right.
Almost like her journey's over, but of course.
But we know that it's not about the destination. No. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. So that's
I also
that's
like
what
that
I love.
She's, you know, from at the beginning of this journey in the Frostlands, she, you know, her feet were cut, dress was ripped, she had nothing, and then she's literally willed herself to being a high lady throughout this whole thing. You know, Tin said in the last chapter, you know, you did a good job here, you were able to take three different factions and like force them under your thumb and make them obey you,
right?
And now she is literally walking out with makeup, dress ready to go meet one of the most important people in the entire world, and she's willed it into being, right?
Into like, being, yeah.
It's fucking awesome, dude.
She's created this moment, right?
Right, yeah. This is the moment.
Vatha falls into step beside her. I thought that was an interesting thing, too.
Yeah.
We burned the bodies last night, he says, as you instructed, Brightness, and another guard patrol stopped by this morning while you were getting ready. They obviously wanted us to know that they intend to keep the peace. If someone camps in this spot and finds the bones of Tin and her soldiers in the ashes, it could lead to questions. I don't know that the caravan workers will keep your secret if asked.
Right.
Thank you, Shallan says. Have one of the men gather the bones into a sack. I'll deal with them. And then the next sentence is, had she really just said that?
I think that Shallan's new
isn't that amazing?
Persona, yeah, I think Shallan's new persona is a necromancer. I'll take the bones. I'll deal with this.
I'll take the bones.
We need some more servants, so I'll...
Yeah. Well, she's just clearly going to set up a school, and she'll put up the bones hanging in the classroom. That's all. some of the men are uncomfortable now that we're so close to the war camps. Do you still think I'm incapable of keeping my promises to them? Vatha says, no, I think I've been right convinced, Brightness. Well, then, I'll reassure them, he says. Excellent.
This is awesome.
They part ways.
You know, doubted her before.
Right.
And now it's like, oh shit,
now,
she's got a fucking shard blade. She's a shard bearer.
Shard blade. He's falling into step.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Vatha's.
He's bought in
around.
Now. Yeah. Totally bought in now.
Although it gets threatened by the end of this chapter.
What do you mean?
Well, when Kaladin starts to suggest that her story is just
right,
that.
Right. Right. Yeah. He does question her again, right?
Oh, yeah. He questions her again.
Yeah. That's right.
Excellent.
That's right.
They part ways. Shallan seeks out Macabre. And when she finds him, the bearded caravan trademaster bows to her with more respect than he had before. He'd already heard about the Shardblade.
Yeah.
I will need one of your men to run down to the war camps and find me a palanquin. Sending one of my soldiers is currently impossible. She wouldn't risk sending them or to be imprisoned. Certainly, Macabre says. The price will be... She gives him a pointed stare. The price will be paid out of my own purse as thanks for a safe arrival, he says.
Right.
Shallan's like, and the price for your discretion? My discretion can always be assured, Brightness, the man says, and my lips are not the ones that should trouble you. True enough. Mm-hmm. He climbs up onto a wagon and he says... One of my men will run on ahead and will send a palanquin back for you. With that, I bid you farewell. He says, I hope it's not insulting for me to say, Brightness, that I hope we never meet again. Then our views in that regard are in agreement, she says. Mm-hmm. The wagon rolls away. So there's Tavlakev. Or sorry, that was Macabre, right?
Yeah, that's Macabre.
That's Macabre. I listened to them last night, Pattern says, with a buzzing excitement. Or, sorry, his buzzing, excited voice from the back of her dress. Is non-existence really such a fascinating concept to humans? What, they spoke of death, did they? Well, they kept wondering if you would come for them. I realized that non-existence is not something to look forward to, but they talked on and on and on about it. Fascinating indeed. Well, keep your ears open, Pattern. I suspect the day is going to get more interesting. But I don't have ears, he said. Ah, yes. A metaphor? Such delicious lies. I will remember that idiom.
So great.
So great. Let me get another point
of view. So Shallan shows up, takes over Macabre's caravan, takes over Tavlakov's slave wagon, takes over all the deserters, and then kills Macabre's head of security and all of her men. And then they're like, that night, they're like, holy shit, is she going to come and kill all of us too?
Is she going to come and kill all? Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're just waiting for their own deaths, but it doesn't come.
It's really cool.
The Alethi war camps were so much more than what she had thought them to be. Mm-hmm. 10 compact cities in a row, each with thousands of fires smoking up into the air, lines of caravans coming in and out. Each camp had hundreds of banners proclaiming the presence of these high-ranking light eyes. Mm-hmm. Her palanquin is being carried down a slope, and she's stunned at the magnitude of the population. She's trying, she's being pulled by Parshman, which a little later she says that she can't help but the irony of being carried on the backs of Voidbringers as they bring her into the war camps.
Yeah.
So, but again, I have to stipulate again, I'm going to say she's referring to them as Voidbringers. She doesn't really know that.
Right. She's taking Yasna's...
So I don't think, in my personal opinion, that's a great scholar. She's referring to them as Voidbringers, but she doesn't really know it to be true. So why refer to them that way?
Because she's seen an overwhelming amount of evidence from Yasna's notes, and she trusts Yasna's judgment, right?
I suppose.
The other thing here, too, is that behind her is Vatha, And the 18 guards she has and the 5 slaves who are carrying her trunks. So she's like got kind of a little bit of a train going on here, going through the city.
Oh my gosh. You know what I thought of? I thought of Aladdin when Aladdin shows up in the 1992 cartoon. Only in her case, she's got like people that kind of stink a little bit.
Yeah, the clothing. She does like, say that. Like, none of them cleaned. So, they all do stink a little bit.
So like the music would be her procession would not be quite like it wouldn't be quite so wonderful. Her procession would be a little broken, a little I don't know. I just thought of that for some reason.
It is really funny.
Their uniforms had only been washed with a high storm, which was more a douse than a wash. Mm-hmm. And the occasional whiff of them caught her nose. And so that's why she had them marching behind the palanquin.
Yeah.
And then she thinks of herself. She's like, well, am I that bad? Do I smell? And she's like, well, I've been using Tin's perfume, but the Alethi preferred to bathe very frequently. Said that the herald, this is wisdom from the heralds, wash with the coming high storm, both servant and bright lord, to ward away rot spren and purify the body. Mm-hmm. So she needed to, she comments, I need the protection of a high prince and quickly.
Yeah, she's got like that's
kind of an interesting position for her to take because it's a little, like she's very confident she can handle the situation, she can lead, she can do these things. But she needs the protection of a high prince.
Yeah, I think she means more like politically, right?
I know.
She needs like the backing. She actually kind of goes through a list here of things that she wants to get done. So she's like,
I know, the immensity of her tasks. Yeah, I love this list.
She needed a protection of a high prince. She needed to discover what Yasna had been looking for in the Shattered Plains.
Yeah.
She needed to use that to persuade the Alethi leadership to take measures against the Parshmen. She would need to investigate the people.
Yeah, stop there.
So
use the information there to persuade the Alethi leadership to take measures against the Parshmen. Again, I feel like she's jumping to conclusions here.
But
anyways,
if we were to believe what Yasna has discovered is true, let's not go against our girl Yasna for a second and believe that it's true. All mm-hmm. of society has these looming threats in their service. You've said it before. It's the scariest part of this. These Parshmen are all over the place doing these mundane jobs.
I know.
And if they
I
were
know.
To awaken,
right.
it could be
I know.
Complete,
that would be,
you know, complete horrible, right?
Yeah.
It'd be complete disaster.
I totally see it as a potential threat. I guess I just wish out of Shallan that it would be communicated that she wishes to present these ideas, this information, and continue the research and see what the High Princes, what Elokar, what Dalinar is willing to do about it.
Right.
Rather than just say that she wants to take measures against the Parshmen, like, how about information, gather more information, what are we willing to do about it?
Right.
Like, I don't know. Anyways, just a little thing.
So it goes on, her list goes on here. She wants to investigate the people Tin had been meeting with. And then she thinks to herself, should I be scamming them?
Find
out what they know about Urithiru.
Urithiru,
and then deflect the attention away from her brothers, right? That she's kind of into as well.
And perhaps find a way to repay them for what they'd done to Yasna.
Right.
She's like, so much to do, so little time.
Yeah.
I was thinking of Beatrix Kiddo with her list of like things to do.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, she's got a checklist for sure. Dalinar Colan was her best hope for all of this.
Yeah.
She's like, but will he take me in? And then Patrin's like, I will need him as a patron, she thinks. If Tin's sources know that Yasna is dead, then Dalinar probably knows as well.
Which we know now that they know. We just heard that.
Right. How will he react to my unexpected arrival? Will he take her books, and pat me on the head, and send me back to Yakavid? The Colan House has no need of a bond to a minor Vedan like me.
Yeah.
And I'm just rambling out loud, aren't I? Patrin says, I love that.
Yeah.
So a knock comes on her palanquin window, and then Vatha says, we're going to have the Parshmen put you down for a bit. We need to ask around and see where the High Prince is.
Right.
Fine, she says.
So a little bit of gather information from Vatha here?
Yep. Dalinar Colan is with the king, Vatha says. The whole lot of the princes are there. Something's on the winds, Brightness, he says. Too many patrols. Lots of soldiers are about. The palanquin owner won't say, but by the sound of it, something has happened recently. Something deadly. Mm-hmm. And Shallan says, well, then take me to the king, then. Vatha raises an eyebrow. He's almost surprised at this. The king of Alfkar was arguably the most powerful man in the world. You aren't going to kill him, are you? What? Well, I figure it's one reason a woman would have, you know, get close to the king, summon the thing. He calls it a thing. Have it through a man's chest before anyone knows what happened.
Yeah.
I'm not going to kill your king, she says. Wouldn't care if you did, he says. Almost hope you would.
Yeah.
He's a child. He's a child wearing his father's clothes, that one is. Everything's gotten worse for Alethkar since he took the throne. But my men, we'd have a hard time getting away if you did something like that. Hard time indeed. I will keep my promise, she says.
The child wearing his father's clothes is a line or a metaphor that's come up before in this series.
Hmm.
I really like it.
A child wearing his father's clothes, yeah. Yeah, that's how we view Elikar. And of course, that's Vatha's opinion. That opinion is going to be shared by many.
Mm-hmm. The opinion of Elikar, you mean?
Of Elikar, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Vatha's opinion of Elikar. Yeah, that's right. Mm. So the palanquin turns northward, passing by the war camps. Takes a long time because the war camps are huge.
Right.
What if she didn't convince Bright Lord Dalinar to take her in and trust her with Yasna's research? What would she be in Dalinar's household? A lesser scribe to be tucked aside and ignored? That was how she'd spent most of her life. She found herself suddenly passionately determined not to let it happen again. She needed the freedom and the funding to investigate Urithiru and Yasna's murder. Shallan would accept nothing else. She could accept nothing else.
Right.
So make it happen, she thought.
Mm-hmm.
This is great. I love it that she's got her plan.
She's got it. She's kind of forming it on the way. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. She doesn't really have a plan until she starts thinking about it. And she's like, oh yeah, right.
Right.
Maybe I should start really thinking about this.
So then her satchel hits the floor and she takes out a few pages that she finds in it. And it's a crinkled sketch of Bluth.
Right.
The hero instead of a slaver. Pattern says, Shallan says, this picture is a lie. And he says, yes. And yet it isn't. This is what he became at the end, to a small degree. And he says, Pattern, yes. So what is the lie and what's the truth? And Pattern is humming softly at all this.
Right.
Then she pulls out the sketch pad and pencil and starts to draw.
Right. What she does best.
She wasn't copying a memory this time. She was searching for something nebulous. A lie that could be real if she could just imagine it correctly. So using Yasna's determination and Tin's confidence, she starts drawing. She gains a sense of rightness that she could not describe, but which she drew from her brother Helleran, the best person she'd ever known. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
So it all pours out onto the page once again with Shallan, and she depicts herself, confident, a young woman standing before Dalinar Colan, as she imagined him. She put him in Shardplate, as he normally was depicted, and those around him studying Shallan with penetrating consternation. So I think this is neat that she, basically, it's kind of like she's willing it into being. Like she's,
yeah.
because she's drawn it, it will come true.
She like is doing for herself what she did for Bluth.
Mm-hmm.
She took Bluth
right.
and drew him as a hero. Now she's taking herself and drawing her as a confident, strong woman. And she's like, when she sees it on the page, she's like, I can do that. You know?
Right.
And
right.
What does she say here? It's,
this is what I would have been, she thinks.
Right.
If I had not been raised in a household of fear, so this is what I will be today. It wasn't a lie. It was a different truth.
I love that. That is really, really cool.
And then another knock comes to the palanquin door. This time she steps out of the vehicle and steps onto cold rock. And she'd sucked in a tiny amount of stormlight, as it happens,
without meaning to. Yeah, which is really neat.
Yep. The palace was both finer and mundane all at the same time. Certainly this was a war camp, so the king's seat wouldn't match the majesty in Carbranth, but at the same time, it was amazing to look at this structure that was erected out here, despite being away from the culture and resources of Alethi, of Alethkar proper. So that's an interesting observation. Gives us a little bit of visual.
Mm-hmm.
Vatha Gaz, she says, attend to me. The rest of you, take up position here. I will send word. Saluted her.
Yeah. I like this next so moment where she's like, wait a minute, did I just take the shortest guy in the group and the tallest guy in the group and now I'm the one in the middle?
A little later.
And then she's like, did I just pick my guards based on aesthetic appeal?
Yeah. Because it's like a perfect tall, middle, and short.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny. Yeah, it's so funny.
They saluted her just before that observation. They saluted her. This is Kaladin.
Yeah.
This is Kaladin with Bridge 4.
Right.
Remember? And this is him. This is Kaladin earning the respect from the other soldiers, the other guards in the war camps that began to salute him and give him the honor that he deserved.
Right.
Based on what he was able to accomplish.
I also feel like this salute.
I think it's cool.
Is almost a salute that also means good luck, because what you're about to do will determine what happens to us as well.
All of us. Yeah, that's what Vath is concerned about, right? Like, are you going to kill? You're going to kill the king, because if you do, it's probably going to end badly for me.
Right. I like here she says to Vatha, you know, I want you to announce me, but only do it whenever I tell you to. And he's like, what do you mean? Like, what am I announcing you as? And she gives like her title or whatever. Bright Shalin Devar, Ward of Yasna Kulin and Causal Betrothed of Adelin Kulin. So say that, but like only when I tell you to say it.
But only when I tell you. Just before that, she notices before going in a large group of guards standing. There were 16 of them. And she's like, wow, that's excessive. That's like, she had read that the king Elikar was paranoid, but that was too much.
She does make this, remark this throughout this chapter here that, like, you know, there seems to be a lot of guards and there seems to be a lot of whatever. And we know why, because the night before.
Yeah, was the assassination attempt.
Yeah. So we know why there's this like amped up guard and security.
But she does not.
But she has no idea yet.
So Shallan didn't share her discomfort. She was excited and strode with the guards with her head held high, acting as if she belonged, and they let her pass.
Right.
Shallan almost stumbles, there were over a dozen guards at the next door, but they didn't challenge her.
Right.
They backed down in silence.
This is like a fake it till you make it type situation, right?
Finally she gets to guards at the next door, and one of them says, finally, Brightness? She stops, turning towards them, raising an eyebrow. I'm sorry, Brightness, the guard says, but you are... She nods to Vatha now to give her description. But I like how Vatha does a little bit of improv here. He says, you don't recognize Brightness Devar? The causal betrothed of Bright Lord Adelin Kulin? And then they appear to be, so the guards are hushed and they're like, oh, okay. And they of course let them pass.
Yeah.
But then they can be heard saying as they pass, oh, I can never keep track of that man's women.
Yeah.
Like referring to Adeline's women. That's so funny.
It's like,
I love it.
Adeline's dating past really helps Shallan in this moment.
Yeah. It's like trying to keep track of Leonardo DiCaprio's women. Like it's impossible. They reached an intersection. And she says, upward, I guess. Kings do like to be at the top of everything, Vatha says.
Yeah.
Attitude might get you past the outer door, Brightness, but it's not going to get you in to see Kulin. Are you really his betrothed? Asks Gaz.
Yeah, so he's like second-guessing here, eh?
Last I checked, which granted was before my ship sank. And she begins to...
Last I checked.
Yeah, last I checked.
Yeah, that's so funny.
They continued upward... asking servants for direct. I find it funny that they have no idea where they're going.
No.
Asking servants for directions, Shallan recognizes that kind of timidity amongst these servants. Was the king a terrible master as her father had been? I thought that was interesting that she had seen that.
Yeah, she's
as they went higher, the structure was less like a fortress and more like a palace. There were reliefs on the walls, mosaics on the floors.
Yep.
Carved shutters and an increasing number of windows. There were lamps that held massive sapphires radiating blue light. And Gaz says, Damnation. Those are Sadeus's colors there.
Mm-hmm.
Noticing. And then, noticing Sadeus's colors, which of course would make Gaz very nervous.
Right.
Vathis's and Thanadol and Aladar and Ruthar. He's meeting up with all the High Princes, as I said.
Yeah.
Sadeus's soldiers were chatting with those of High Prince Ruthar and High Prince Aladar, and Dalinar's soldiers stood alone. And Shallan could sense hostility between them and the others in the hallway.
Yeah, she...
And then she notices for the first time... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that thank God she read that book that Yasna had on all the High Princes and their... You know, their heldry and all their different things, because she's able to recognize them.
That's how she would recognize them as well?
Yeah, so she
Well, Gaz would, of course, because he was right in it.
Yeah.
Dalinar's guards had very few light eyes among them. That was odd, she says.
Mm-hmm.
And did that one man at the door look familiar? The tall, dark-eyed man with the blue coat that went down to his knees. The man with the shoulder-length hair curling slightly.
Not wearing boots.
He was speaking in a low voice with another soldier, who was one of the men from the gates below.
So one of the gates, one of the guys from the below gates, who probably saw them walk by, came up to report
to report on the man
with the curly hair, which is Kaladin.
Which is Kaladin. Looks like they beat us up here, Vatha says.
Yeah.
And then she says, oh no. The man, an officer by the uniform, strode directly toward her. He ignored the hostile stares of the other High Prince's soldiers as he walked right up to Shallan. Prince Adeline, he said flatly, is engaged to a horn eater. She'd almost forgotten the encounter, and she's thinking, as he says that, she's like, I'm going to strangle that. She cut off, feeling a stab of depression. She'd ended up... she had ended up killing Tin.
Right, she ended up killing her.
Yeah.
She's Tin, like, I'm going to kill you.
I'm going to kill you, yeah. Obviously not, she says back to Kaladin. I was traveling alone through the wilderness, revealing my true identity did not seem prudent.
Makes sense.
The man says, where are my boots? Is this how you address a light-eyed lady of rank? It's how I address a thief, he says. I just gotten those boots.
Yeah.
I'll have a dozen new pairs sent to you after I've spoken with High Prince Dalinar. You think I'm going to let you see him? You think you get to choose? She says. Yeah. I love that response. It's so good.
Like, he doesn't
saying
choose.
That, you think you get to choose? Oh my God, I love it. This dialogue is just fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm the captain of his guard, woman.
So yeah, he does get to choose. He's the captain of the guard.
Right. And then she thinks, oh, blast, that's going to be tricky to get over.
Yeah.
She says, well, then tell me, captain, what is your name? Kaladin. And then it says, odd. That. Right? In the text?
Yep.
Isn't that cool?
It's
says
really cool.
Odd. And then it says, that sounded like a Light Eyes name. But it's funny that it says
it's
odd.
It's really nice that it's there, right?
It's really nice that it's there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know what that means. I guess it means that these people are linked. Maybe they are different, I don't know, personalities that will come out to know each other somehow.
I think it's just a small hint that a dark-eyed man is named Kaladin. And we've always been told that it was like a name that a light-eyed person would be because it's kind of
would
symmetrical.
Normally have.
Yeah,
right.
So, it's odd that he'd have a light-eyed name.
Excellent, she says. Now I have a name to use when I tell the High Prince about you. He's not going to like his son's betrothed being treated this way. Kaladin waves over to his soldiers, and the men in blue come and surround her. Where had Gaz gotten off to, she noticed. She's thinking. She turns and finds him backing down a corridor, and Kaladin had spotted him and says, Gaz, what is this?
He's about to call him
Kaladin,
lordship.
You're an officer, so things have been going well for you. You know this man, Shallan says to Kaladin. He tried to get me killed, Kaladin says, on multiple occasions. he's one of the most hateful little rats I've ever known. Great,
she says. Thinks, yeah, that's so funny. Oh my God.
You're not Adeline's betrothed, Kaladin says to his men gleefully as they seize Gaz. Adeline's betrothed has drowned. You are an opportunist with a very bad sense of timing. I doubt that Dalinar Colan will be pleased to find a swindler trying to capitalize on the death of his niece.
Okay, so here is the theory that Tin came up with, right? This is what Tin thought Shallan was doing.
Right.
And now Kaladin's like, we just found out that that person died, actually,
right,
on our ship.
Died. Yeah.
So you're just coming over here trying to fucking bank on that stuff.
Yeah. So him saying this has got her sweating.
Yeah.
Vatha glances at Shallan, worried that Kaladin's guesses were correct.
Yeah.
Shallan steadies herself and reaches for her safe pouch, pulling out a piece of paper that Yasna's notes, and she says, is High Lady Navani in that room? Kaladin is silent.
Yeah.
She says, show her this, please. Kaladin hesitates and then takes the sheet. It was one of the communications written between Yasna and her mother, arranging for the causal. So this is good proof. This is smart of her to have this and
smart.
To produce
because
it.
Because Navani's going to have an exact copy of this.
Because of the span read.
Right.
That's right. So it's perfect for proof, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Kaladin says, we'll see. Shallan was beginning to say, we'll, and she found herself sputtering. So this has got her shaken. And then she says, is this really all because I lied to you? She demanded more softly. It's about doing my job, Kaladin says. Your job is to be offensive and asinine? No, I'm offensive and asinine on my own time, too. My job is to keep... Yeah. My job is to keep people like you away from Dalinar Colan. Oh, I guarantee he will want to see me.
Yeah.
Well, forgive me for not trusting the word of a horn-eater princess. Would you like some shells to chew on while my men tow you away to the dungeons? All right, that's enough, she says. So gloves are off.
Yeah, she's like I've been trying to play nice little Vorn girl, nice high lady right now.
Here comes the tongue lash.
Yeah, yeah. Smart she mouth Shallan comes up to play now.
She says, the dungeons? That sounds wonderful. At least there I'd be away from you, idiot man. Only for a short time, he says. I'd be by to interrogate you. What? I couldn't pick a more pleasant option, like being executed. You're assuming I could find a hangman willing to put up with your blathering long enough to fit the rope.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to kill me, you could always let your breath do the job.
And then this is the insult that everyone goes, oh, like all Bridge Four are
burn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Burn. And he says, I should envy you. He says, my breath needs to be up close to kill, while that face of yours can kill a man from any distance.
Oh, geez.
Any man, she says. Why, it's not working on you. I guess that's proof that you're not much of a man.
Yeah.
He says, I misspoke. I didn't mean any man, just males of your own species. But don't worry. I'll take care not to let our chulls get close. And then she says, oh, your parents are in the area then?
Oh, my God.
Referring to his parents as chulls. And of course, this is actually a little sensitive for him because, you know, he has a very dramatic history with his family.
Yeah. And so then the joking stops here. He's like, my parents have nothing to do with this.
Nothing to do with this. And she says, yes, that makes sense. I'd expect that they would want nothing to do with you. At least my ancestors had the sense not to breed with a sponge.
Right.
At least I know my parentage, she snaps back. Yasna would have been disappointed.
Yeah.
How often had Yasna tried to get her to get control of her tongue? True wit was controlled wit, and this clearly was Shallan not in control.
Yeah.
Bah, says Kaladin, shaking her arm free of his. I revise my opinion of you. You're obviously a highborn, Light Eyes. Only they are capable of being this infuriating.
Yes,
and stalks
that is
away.
Very astute by Kaladin. That's awesome.
Yeah. Getting into a shouting match with the head of the High Prince Dalinar's guard, Vatha says. Was that wise? She says, we created an incident. Now Dalinar Colan will hear of this one way or another. That guardsman won't be able to keep my arrival secret from him. Vatha hesitates. So it was part of the plan. Hardly, she admits. I'm not nearly that clever, but it should work anyway.
I love this. I like, she's like, you know what? We kind of got what we wanted anyways. Like, even though I'm not in the room yet, like, even if he doesn't let me in the room, people are going to hear about this and they're going to want to investigate it regardless. Man, it's really, really cool.
You know what I find is fascinating is, again, maybe it's because they've met before.
Right.
If Kaladin and Shallan have some kind of connection, let's say, then maybe that's why.
They sort of do. They both are exhibiting powers of the Knights Radiant.
Right. But maybe that's why he can retort back fairly well against her tongue.
Right.
Because he knows it. He's been through it.
Right.
I don't know. I'm just making little guesses. I don't know. But I find it interesting that he can interact with her and almost hold his own,
right,
sharing the insults.
When he's not being gloomy and dour, we know that he gets a little bit of his smart tongue from his mom. He always said before that his mom was kind of the quick-witted one, right? So he doesn't really use that very often because he's just busy scowling at everything. But when he stops scowling, he is quick-witted.
Right. Well, it should work anywhere. Vatha says, even for a deserter, you're a coward, Gaz. Looking over to him, Gaz just stares at the ground.
Don't you feel bad for Gaz?
I do.
The guy's
Shallan
made a choice to change his life, and now he's like, fuck, I gotta come talk to the guy that I tried to fuck over a bunch of times.
Poor
like,
Gaz.
Shit.
Oh, he must be so...
So
like eating his own,
and, yeah,
just eating his own feet. Like, you know what I mean? Like how do you go from being in charge of making Kaladin's life so difficult to now you're faced with Kaladin being in charge of the protection of Dalinar Kholin?
Right.
And, and pretty
said,
soon
you,
the king.
That didn't take long for you to, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Gaz says, well, Shallan asked him, well, how do you know Kaladin? How do you know him?
Yeah.
He was a slave, he says, at the lumber yards where I used to work. He's a storming man. He's dangerous, Brightness. Violent. He's a troublemaker. I don't know how he got to be in such a high position in such a short time.
Kaladin, he's awesome.
Because he's awesome, yeah. Kaladin did not enter the conference chamber. However, the meeting appears to be over, and several of the aides rush out. So Captain Kaladin is going in, holding onto the sheet of paper that Shallan had given him. Eventually, Kaladin steps back out, with the look of annoyed resignation on his face.
Right.
He points toward Shallan and then thumbed over his shoulder, indicating that she could enter. His guards let her pass, though they restrained Vatha when he tried to follow her.
I do like this from Vatha.
She waved him back, took a deep breath, and then strode through the moving crowd of soldiers and aides, entering the king's conference chamber.
Yeah, buddy.
She has arrived at her destination.
Yeah, buddy, she has. She's finally got here. It took us like a long time, but she's finally gotten here.
So that was chapter 36, Words of Radiance, before Shallan actually gets to be in the place and position she wants to be in.
Right.
It took a long time for her.
It took a long time to get here. But you know what? If she had gotten there like that, if she had gone from boat to room, she wouldn't have grown and become the person she is right now.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you're right. Of
She's learned to survive on her own. She's learned to, you know, figure out kind of what pattern in her can do a little bit. She's accepted her place in the world a little bit anyway. She, you know, has come to terms with the fact that, you know what, sometimes you got to use the most powerful weapon that you have in your arsenal. Sometimes you got to kill a bitch with a shard blade, even though you never want to use that thing.
Even though you were, you don't want to produce one.
No.
Oh, I cannot wait for that to materialize again.
So what's your highlight for this amazing
chapter?
Oh,
the highlight, it's got to be the tongue lash. I mean, the interaction between Kaladin and
Round
her
two?
Is just, yeah, it's so good.
Yeah.
You know, I want my boots back. I mean, come on. It's so good.
My highlight notes are Kaladin versus Shallan, round two, fight.
Round two, fight. Yep.
Can we do an honorable mention of pattern picking the lock?
Yeah. Oh, the lock. Yeah. Pattern. And then he says, you know, like I love that, he recognizes a pattern and then he can manipulate it. That's delightful.
Also delightful. Pattern being super creepy because he's like, oh yeah, by the way, I was listening to them all night last night and they just talked about you coming to kill them. Like, what the fuck? Are you going around listening to everybody, Pattern? That's really creepy.
Well,
he is cryptic.
If he is cryptic, so
yeah, that's awesome. You know what is also very cryptic is...
An info dump?
No, not the info dump. No, it is the info dump. Sorry, I don't know why I said that. We actually covered quite a lot of it in the actual episode.
Episode, yeah.
But I'm just going to go through some of it here.
Sure.
The Storm Wardens are, like, you know, call their numerology and reading of the winds a science. We talked about that already as a way of making sure that the Vorin prohibition on predicting the future is not known. So that's kind of cool for us to know that that's how they get away with it. I love the fact that the prolonged use of the Soulcasters turn the Ardent's eyes into gemstones and their skin stone
so creepy.
And crack like a living statue. It's really fucking cool.
I like that.
It almost makes it like a sub... human or like a different human, you know what I mean? Like, I could see it as in like being, you're almost like a genasi, like an earth genasi that has like a little bit of tough skin and like, it's really, really cool.
Yeah, it also begs, I find like of a little devotion, like a cult might be given a quality for devotion to a certain thing.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know, for me, it's a little on the creepy side, but
I think it's really cool, though. They must look really neat. They must look awesome.
Yeah, really neat.
We got Logic Spren, tiny little storm clouds, which is really great. We also got a little bit of Alethi hygiene. You mentioned it earlier. They prefer frequent bathing and having a clean scent as opposed to using perfume. They wash in all the high storms. Both servants and bright lords are to do so wash away rot spren and purify the body. And this is like comes from direct from the heralds. This is
from the heralds.
The heralds
wisdom
advise
the...
this, right? Which is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Thou must bathe.
The last thing I wanted to talk about just really quickly here is surges. We've not really talked about at the end of A Way of Kings and at the end of all the books, there are kind of like an index, an Ars Arcanum. And I told you kind of not to read them.
Yes.
But
we did go over them.
Yeah, we went over them. I don't think we recorded us talking about them, though. But one of the things I do want to talk about here is because of the epigraph of chapter 35... It says, they also, when they had settled their rulings and the nature of each bond's placement, called the name of it the Nail Bond, with regard to its effect upon the souls of those caught in its grips. In this description, each was related to the bonds that drive Roshar itself, the 10 surges. Okay? So, I don't think we've actually gone through the list of all what those primordial
surges?
Powers are that bond all of Roshar and drive it. So here, I'm just going to read them to you right now. Adhesion, gravitation, division, abrasion, progression, illumination, transformation, transportation, cohesion, intention. So the people of Roshar believe that these 10 powers are the things that make life on Roshar exist.
Possible, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's cool.
It's just really neat. And then those are some of the words and concepts that are related to the 10 surges as well.
Right.
You can hear gravitation, clearly. Zeth uses some of that. Illumination, Shallan is using some of that. And adhesion, we know that Cal is able to stick stuff to stuff.
Right.
So adhesion is one of those things too. So there's some stuff in there right now that,
that's neat. Yeah.
To keep an eye, you know what it makes me think of? It makes me think of the
schools of magic.
Schools of magic in D&D.
Schools. I know that's all I was thinking of during this, during your, like, you know, making that list. And then of course, this is expanded to 10. I don't think there are 10 schools.
No, I don't think so. I think there's
of
nine,
magic.
Maybe.
Although, well, they did expand on it on the different editions.
They did, yeah.
Of,
there's different variations.
There's shadow magic now, and
depending on the source book you use, there are there are new schools of magic. Yeah, so
there are a couple of others. Yeah,
mm-hmm, yeah. So that's
you're right. That's really cool.
It's really neat.
It's neat that that's a magical way to see metaphysical. Yeah, like these metaphysical events that shape the world.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. Awesome. So before we get to the stuff at the end, I just wanted to say that I keep forgetting to do this. I'm going to try to remember at the end of every episode. So next episode, we are going to be covering chapters 37 and 38. We are coming upon part three is going to be divided up into weird parts where we'll be doing three chapters and then one chapter and then two chapters and then one chapter. So I just wanted to let the reader know or the listener know that if you are following along with us, which is, I think there's a few of them, then the next two chapters we are covering are 37 and 38. So yeah, if you are holding off on reading more and you want to just read with us, that's awesome. So we are covering just those next two chapters and they are amazing chapters. I can't wait for you to, dude, I want you to read them like right now. I want you to get off this call right now and go read them and then dude me later. Like,
okay, let's do it.
So yeah, if you want to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/heroesof. We have all different kinds of tiers up there that you can support the show with. There's bonus episodes and all kinds of little goodies going on. If you want to support the show indirectly, you could always tell your friends and your relatives to read the Stormlight Archive and then listen to the StormPod afterwards. Or just tell everyone that you know that's already currently reading the Stormlight Archive. I'll say on Sunday evening, I was looking through Reddit and someone had posted on the Stormlight Archive Reddit subreddit and they said, I'm just starting to read the books. I'm very confused. I don't know what's what. And then one of the responses by a Redditor was, I highly recommend listening to the StormPod. Sean and Jack break it down two chapters at a time. They do a great job. They bring up stuff that you might overlook, even if it's your second time reading it. And that post resulted in like hundreds of people listening. So I just want to say, you know, word of mouth works really well. If you really like what we do and you want other people to listen, just, you know, tell people about it. We'd be forever in your debt.
We've got to say a big thanks to the listeners.
We do. We really do. Right? Maybe we don't thank them enough. Thank you, listeners.
I don't think we... Thank you, listeners.
Wait a minute. Do we call them Parshendi or do we call them listeners?
I know, right?
Right.
I'm going to go with listeners.
Okay.
So
that sounds good. If you want to reach out to us, you can do so at heroesofhakathra@gmail.com or on Twitter at heroesof1 or on Instagram at the Storm Pod. You can also find our Facebook group on Facebook, but you know what? It's like a ramshackled shack. There's literally nothing on there. Don't go there.
We have it, but don't go.
But don't go there. If you, thank you very much for listening to the show, everyone. I am really excited that we're into part three now. Thanks for joining us on this adventure. We love you very much. And till next time,
take care, everybody.
The StormPod is brought to you by Heroes Of. Music and theme song by Jack Forrest Productions. Additional music by Jason Moray. Produced by our wonderful Patreon team and the Heroes of Hakathra.